How Augusta students would never be bored outside of their...
I think there was a failure to understand the need that people had for these kinds of things, that people thought that somehow or other this would be kind of a casual interest, and that was the other reason in the early days. The program that Margaret designed was designed so that people could come here and study one thing in the morning and another thing in the afternoon. All the classes were half-day classes because she didn't think anybody would be interested in spending a full day weaving or quilting or doing whatever they were studying. And of course, we know that people will spend 24 hours a day doing these things because this is not a casual learning experience. This is a life-altering experience. People are coming here, for the most part, expecting to learn something that they would like to do, but what happens is that it grabs hold of them, and they suddenly see a side of themselves or a side of their past or a side of their lives or their heritage that they were unaware of. So it just sweeps them along.
I know you have to go. Tell me your favorite Olive Goodwin story before you leave.
My favorite Olive Goodwin story, you've probably already been told by Sheila. Sheila Amorese, who's now Sheila Rice and is still working for Augusta, was my secretary. And her two small daughters were, in order to keep them out of her hair, they were not terribly interested. One of them was, but the other one was sort of a little rebel. They weren't terribly interested in taking a class, but Sheila found it more convenient while she was working to have them take a class, so she put them in Olive's weaving class. And little Shannon sat there and wove all day to her heart's content and was just sweet and wonderful. And Nicole was the rebel, and she would keep sneaking away from her loom. And Olive, you would see her swooping down out of the plaza or out of the bathroom with Nicole in tow by the ear, pulling her along by the ear back to her loom to weave.
Like the early days of the Industrial Revolution.
Well, it was really cute, and I don't think she heard her, but Nicole says she still thinks her ears got stretched.
Well, thanks very much.
Okay.
11 years, it starts to blur.
Try 20.
What year was that, Jim?
Could you say my name is Noel Craddock?
My name is Noel Craddock.
And tell me what your history with Elkins was. When did you first come here and why?
Well, let me see. We were counting earlier today. I had left King College in Bristol, Tennessee to take a job at Davis and Elkins College in the economics department. And I think it was 72. I think it was the fall of 72. That I came here. And was the first Augusta was the summer of 73, is that correct? Does that sound right? Okay. When I was teaching at King College in Bristol, we were on a 4-1-4 calendar. 4 months, 1 month, 4 months. And so in Tennessee, I had started in that 1 month teaching a traditional music class where students that would sign up could play either banjo or guitar, fiddle or dulcimer or whatever they wanted to play. And the class the students there would, at that point in time, you could still go out in the woods and find sort of traditional musicians and get to know them and record them and do some of that sort of amateur folklore field work. And so we were doing that down there, but we tried to do that up here, but it didn't work. So at any rate, I sort of continued that tradition of offering that traditional...
What was it that didn't work here?
Having students go out in the field and do sort of amateur field work, folklore field work. I think they did a little bit. They would go visit Woody Simmons, that sort of thing. Doney Gum down in Mill Creek. At any rate, the way I remember things, I think Margaret Godden and I were having lunch one day in the faculty cafeteria or somewhere, and Margaret confessed that she'd always had this vision of a heritage arts festival in this area, and what did I think it would take to get it started. And so we just put our heads together and laid out some plans. Of course, I told her I'd do the music class, and it was interesting hearing Margo say that she'd gotten the Apple Shop mailing list, because I remember we got the County Records mailing list, and that was one of the ways we promoted the festival. And Dale Wilson, of course, came in very early on with State Arts Council experience and work, and we got some money from them, and we got some money from another foundation. I've forgotten the name of the foundation that sort of carried us that first year. And so then I taught the music class for the first couple of years, and then I moved back to North Carolina in 75. It's hard to describe Augusta sort of as an experience. It's words fail. Margo was doing a pretty good job of saying things like, you come and you think you're going to learn to play the banjo or guitar, and that's not what it is. It's a whole social ball of some sort that really gets to you if you're sensitive, you know, reasonably sensitive, and stays with you for the rest of your life. You make friends that you'll remember for years and want to see again. I've got a friend today. I've got a number of friends. Paul Reisler for one. A friend of mine, Tony, is in New Mexico. You get friends that stay with you for the rest of your life just over this, you know, a couple of weeks experience. It sort of shows the intensity of Anita. You remember Anita Parlow. Anita, I haven't seen her. I don't see her regularly, but I saw her maybe 5 years ago. So it's just, you become friends with these people, and it doesn't matter if you're politically different or, you know, socially, economic, you become unified through Augusta.
Tell me a little bit about your own music, where it comes from, and what you were attempting, what your vision for a musical program was.
That's a great question. I don't think my vision was too much more complex than wanting to get people coming along behind me involved in traditional music, and the part of their experience that I wanted to be sure that they had was that they had a very clear knowledge of and respect for and awareness of those who came before them, the traditional musicians who came before them. I wrote an article that was in Golden Seal one year trying to define the difference between old-time music and bluegrass music. And one of the ways I chose to define the difference was that a lot of old-time musicians will say, well, when they're playing in public, well, I learned this tune from so-and-so, whereas bluegrass musicians never usually say anything like that. And so in old-time musician, there's a very time-honored effort to maintain respect for and acknowledgement of and homage to whoever taught you this tune. I remember talking to this guitar player that played with Doc Watson years ago. He talked about the lady down the road that didn't teach him a tune, she gave him a tune, and he remembered that lady, you know, and her name, and this is her tune, she gave it to me. So that sort of tradition, that was my vision.
Very personal link.
Yeah, to try, and so then it was important, that was why I said at the beginning, if I could get these students away from me, and I'm sort of a middleman, really. I'm not, you know, I'm not the Woody Simmons generation or the Melvin Wine generation. I wanted to get those students back to those people, or Donnie Gum, to get to know those people, because they've got things that, you know, you and I'll never have, I think. I don't know how to define it or explain it, but they've got something that everybody knows about. I wanted the students to try to do that. And Augusta sort of has done it by bringing those people to the students. So when I taught the class, Woody would come, Frank George would come, those kind of people would come to class.
Did you have active research going on to try to identify who those musicians were that could come, or you just, how did you happen to know those people?
I had played music with them over the years. Woody and I played together a lot. I'd gotten to know Frank George over the years just through being in a living room where we were all playing music, as much as anything. Very kind of living room oriented music scene.
Well, it's great to see you back here.
Thanks.
Is there anything else that you can pick up or say?
Not really. It's pretty amazing and very gratifying to see how Augusta has lasted. And it's obviously due to the hard work of a lot of people.
If it keeps developing at the rate it has, where do you suppose it'll all wind up?
I think it'll just become an institution, a very much a fixture of American life. I hope that's what it does, or of world life. You know, that looks like we get people from out of the country here. So I think it's an amazingly valuable thing that we've got going here, and that everybody knows it. Everybody who matters knows it, and it will last.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Hey, my name is Margaret Godden.
My name is Margaret Godden.
And can you tell me a little bit about when you, what your association with this community is? I know that your father was a real institution here.
Right. I was born here and went to college here, graduated, attended my West Virginia University, completed my master's and my doctorate at West Virginia University, and also at Ohio State University, postdoctoral.
Test 1, 2.
Margaret, you were. So, are you going to be
telling about your educational?
Yeah, I'll tell you a little bit about my background so that you'll understand that West Virginia people do go to college, they do graduate, and they find black diamonds in their own backyard and do come back home again. So what I had done was to complete my education here in the county schools of Randolph County, then went to Davis-Nelkins College, completed my master's degree and doctorate at West Virginia University and at Ohio State University, postdoctoral work at University of Cambridge, or Cambridge University, depending upon your leaning, in England, and at the University of Illinois in Bloomington, Indiana in Bloomington. So then, all during that time, I had been, with the exception of a couple years, teaching in the schools at Petersburg, West Virginia, and enjoying doing a number of things there, including directing the choir and working with young people who were interested in their own heritage. I myself grew up in a home where heritage was very important. I learned from my mother how to sew. By the age of 10, I could cook and sew my own clothing, as could my sister. And then I learned from my German-born grandmother how to knit and crochet and tat and quilt and so forth. Learned some things also through the 4-H in the local area. After teaching in Petersburg, I joined my husband when he was in service, then came back to the Randolph County Schools and taught at Colton High School for 5 years, Elkins High School for 5 years, and then went to Davis and Elkins College. All during that time, and when I was growing up, I cherished for young people the opportunities that I myself had had as a child to grow up learning from a master craftsman, in this case, my grandmother and others in the Elkins area community. It was wonderful to learn a craft or an art from one of them. I also learned to play. While I was at D&E, I became chair of the Division of Arts. And in the Arts Division in the 1970s, we're up to 1970 now. I was born a long time before then. At any rate, in the 1970s, we were looking for a project, something that would unite the community and the college and serve the needs of the region. Jesse Reed, who was a member of the Arts Division, brought to the division in 1972 a recommendation that we begin a heritage arts workshop at Davis and Elkins College. I thought the idea was wonderful, so I took it to the Arts Division in 1972. Claire Fiorentino, whom you, Mike, would remember, had been an institution at Davis and Elkins College and instrumental in theater development in this area, including community development of theater, was a part of that group. Jesse had been approached by some people in the community also saying, we really need to do something here, because all of us recognized that we had talented people, artisans in our own area who could be instrumental in passing on the heritage. So we talked about it in the division, and the division adopted the project. As chair of the division, it was my job to implement it, and it helped fulfill one of my dreams that we could indeed establish a center where people could come and learn arts and crafts from craftspeople. These were to be the Appalachian arts and crafts, the traditional arts and crafts. So we worked with it for a while. I talked with various people on the campus. I talked with people in the community. They thought it was a good idea. So I designed it with their advice. We presented it to the administration of the college. Wilson was the dean at that time and Hermanson was the president. Both of them approved the idea, but we needed funding that the college didn't have. So what I did was to gather people of the community together in the fall of 1972. I called the superintendent of schools, I called Dale Wilson, who was the chair of the Randolph County Creative Arts Council. We contacted also Norman Fagan and Jim Andrews of the West Virginia Arts and Humanities Council. Clara Fiorentino was there, Willetta Hinkle, several others in the community who were interested in preserving and transmitting the traditional arts and crafts, the Appalachian arts and crafts. That was a very stormy November day when we met. It was snowing, it was icy, and I thought nobody would attend. But they all came. And so we met and we talked about the possibility of the community and the college uniting in the support of traditional Appalachian arts and crafts. They approved it. Afterwards, Dale Wilson stopped by and we talked about the fact that we needed funding and we needed an organized group in the community to help support it. So Dale said, I think that's a wonderful project for the Randolph County Creative Arts Council. Let's take it to them. So he called a meeting and we met in the Forestry Building just across the campus, as you know. We talked a long time. I presented it many, many questions from that group. Waletta Hinkle was there, Rosemary Marshall was there, Kay Gillespie, and some other members of the Randolph County Creative Arts Council. After lengthy discussion, it was approved almost unanimously that the Randolph County Creative Arts Council would help support the project. So Dale and I sat down and we designed the outline of the program as had been approved by the Davis and Elkins College Arts Division. And then I set about organizing it. Meanwhile, Dale was responsible for contacting Norman Fagan and Jim Andrews. Both of them approved the project. They pointed out, however, that in order to have funding for the project, we would need to be assured that it had community support. So Dale and the Creative Arts Council set about the community support angle, as did I as well. I wrote to the then superintendent, Jason Meadows, and asked Jason for support from the county schools. Went to a meeting of the officials in the county, and they gave it wholehearted support. Well, with the community supporting the project, we submitted a grant proposal to the Arts and Humanities Council, West Virginia, and had it approved for funding. Then we were off for our first year. We used local craftspeople. We had it housed at Davis and Elkins College. There, Olive Goodwin, Scotty Weist was there. Candace Laird was their person in basketry. A number of the local craftspeople. I have in my file the names of the people, and of course I transferred the records to Margot Blevin, and she has those as well.
So you were telling me that first summer you had local craftspeople and
I was the first director, and Dale Wilson was co-director. For because it was a community college project, we had ourselves listed as co-directors. Dale would come to the campus at least once a week, and of course, in the first Augusta, I spent all my time at the campus. In fact, Dale and I laughed about it because we were tempted to rename Albert Hall, which was the center for most of the classes, Augusta Hall. We had dance, we had the traditional dance as well as the basketry, pottery. I remember Paul Reisler came in and he came to build our potter's wheels for us. And then we discovered that he was a talented musician. Well, after that, of course, in the subsequent years, we had him teach musical instrument construction. The trapezoid is an outgrowth of Paul's influence that began that first year. A number of things began that first year. Candace Laird's work, of course, Waletta Hinkle taught the combination crafts, and you can look at the records and see all of that. But what grew out of that was a devotion to the craftsperson, the vision that all of us shared, which was that we wanted to have more than just a couple days with a craftsperson. Our vision in the first Augusta and the subsequent ones when I was on the advisory council was that Augusta Workshop would provide time for people to work with a master craftsperson, whether it was in arts, crafts, whatever. It would be more than just a one-day deal, as was happening in so many places across the country. It would be different from Cedar Lakes, and it was unique. We had a combination of both short classes and long classes. Our musical instrument construction was a month to 5 weeks long. We continued that pattern thereafter. The Arts and Humanities Council, the West Virginia Creative Arts Council, and the Arts West Virginia Creative Arts Council. Sorry, Randolph County Creative Arts Council and the West Virginia Arts and Humanities Council particularly wanted to continue to share our vision. And I think that it's carried on today, although we have more short classes because people's lives are arranged that way. They do have the opportunity to work with a master person for a significant length of time. In subsequent years, we began apprenticeships. For example, we had a memorial established after the death of Candace Laird. We had funds to establish a Candace Laird Memorial Fund for scholarships, and we provided scholarships from the beginning for people who had the talent but didn't have the money to learn from the master craftsperson. And that has all continued. A number of additions have been made. I remember when Noel Credick was with us. I think you spoke with him just a little bit ago. He was interested in the music aspects of the program. He and Dennis Lindberg were very influential in underscoring the fact that we had in this area among the best people who were the traditional musicians, and that we ought to record them and cherish them before they passed on. I think Michael Klein did a great deal of that too, with the folklore and with interviewing craftspeople. The workshop has grown from about 100 people the first year to now it's more than 1,200 from all over the world. And it's wonderful to have people share together. I'm very proud to have been the first founder of the Augusta Heritage Creative Art Workshop. It's interesting to me that we chose the name Augusta. The name was suggested by Willetta Hinkle and Sedavia Godden. As you know, West Virginia, this area was at one time part of Virginia. And this area was called West Augusta. So we felt it was fitting that we name it Augusta Heritage Arts Workshop. Okay?
Great. Thank you. Dr. Godden, for a very succinct and cogent presentation. It's great having everybody here today. And Olive Goodman just came in. I think we're going to try to... Can you say, my name is Eileen?
My name is Eileen.
Tell your whole name.
My name is Eileen Barbara Overman Carson Sutton Carson of the Sutton Family Clockers.
That
just says it all, doesn't it? It spans a few years. Oh, God.
Tell me about your first encounter with Augusta.
First encounter with Augusta was Rodney and I were trying to figure out if it was 76 or 77. They couldn't find anything on 76, so it must be 77. But I thought maybe it was 76. But anyway, we came up here with the Green Grass Cloggers from North Carolina. And we'd known Paul Reisler, Trapezoid, from out there on the festival, out there on the road. And 77 was the first year of us thinking that we were professional. Uh-huh. It's the first year we went professional.
You got a big green bus.
Yeah, we got a big green bus, and it was a gospel quartet's bus, and it had quartet on it, so we called the bus Quartet. And it had, do you remember it? It had running lights on the back in the shape of a cross. So we got in that bus and we drove over here. And I remember pulling the bus up behind and being all excited. You could feel that this place was not the usual kind of job. You really could feel a sort of a kindred. We felt like we belonged here from the very first. And we danced on the main stage, and I don't know that anyone had ever danced on it. And over half of us fell down in that first performance. It was like an ice skating rink.
took us years to season the stage. And Michael, do you know they won't let us dance on it now? Do you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
That just happened 3 years ago. So the dean in the college won't allow it.
Well, the college has always been known for intelligent administration.
It's really a bummer to us because Augusta is it's one of the best stages. It's a real stage, you know. It's one of the best stages that we dance on. We've also taken all kinds of important classes in there.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, it's shaped us and built us over the years. It became almost like a sacred thing to perform on that stage, honestly. So it's kind of a bummer for us. I won't talk about it too much, but every time a subject comes up, I get mad. Surely we'll be able to change that soon. But anyway, I really can remember us feeling like very at home here right from the first. I can.